The return of the tech gurus. Whether or not you care about Black Friday deals, chances are someone in your life has technology on his or her holiday gift list. According to the Consumer Technology Association, nearly three-quarters of holiday shoppers, 186 million people, will buy a tech product this year. From build-your-own robots to the newest in gaming consoles, smart speakers, wireless automotive Bluetooth speakers for hands-free driving, the latest AirPods, and more, there is something for people of all ages and interests. Meantime, there are new warnings about keeping your technology and your data safe while traveling, as many of us get ready to hop on a flight or train for Thanksgiving, and many more begin their holiday shopping in earnest. Our tech team returns to bring it all down to earth and answer your questions. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Smart speakers, Bluetooth speakers, robots, AirPods, Nests, and more. How to keep up? Well, today our tech team returns to help us keep up and offer advice on holiday high-tech gifts. In the studio with me, Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development with the Maine State Library. Andrew Rosenstein is owner of TechPort, and Jared Maxfield is owner of Necessary Technology. Welcome back to everybody. So nice to see your faces. As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Is your car hooked up for the new hands-free law yet? Do you have questions about whether a smart speaker is right for you? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We always start this program the same way because it's really interesting. Jared, what are you most excited about right now?
I'm excited about a lot of things, I guess, outside
in
of
the technology world?
Outside of the holidays. Yeah. I guess the new, we were just talking about it before we started, about the new Apple AirPods. I've had AirPods version 1 since they came out, and they're in my pocket right now, and they have been for the last almost couple of years. For somebody who wears headphones or uses them on the regular, it's an excellent product. But the new ones come out, and one of the big features I'm looking at is they've got noise cancellation built in. So a lot of the larger headsets that you see, like the Beats headsets and things like that, similar to what we're wearing on the radio right now, large headsets that cover your entire ear, not just something that's in it, a little bit more noticeable, always feature noise cancellation, things like that. So I know my AirPods, when I go on an airline flight, they're not really the best for getting rid of that background noise. So an upgrade might be in my future, and see if I can get those new ones. But
And for those Luddites in the audience, I'm not insulting you all. For those of you who don't know what an AirPod is, it's a wireless little.
Oh, yes.
It's an earbud that doesn't have a wire.
Correct. I should probably explain what we're talking about. it's a wireless, earphones, but they're independent of each other. They're not connected by a cable or a wire, or even they're not even connected to each other with something wrapping around your head. They're two independent.
You're talking about noise cancellation and traveling, though. One might miss a flight if one's sitting in an airport waiting area. Well,
you should have your local airline app downloaded, giving you constant updates on and maybe have your boarding pass on your Apple Watch and, have Alexa update you on what time the flight's going to leave.
The world you three live in is so different than my world, I have to confess. Janet, what are you most excited about right now?
Well, I was down in Rhode Island with some other state library people through New England, and we did a whole bunch on VR and one of
virtual reality
headsets. And one of the ones that tested out was the Quest. And so the thing about this, before you really had to invest into, a computer, and the software was there, and you had these, things set up. So you set up your kind of VR area. Well, these come with little handhelds. You actually draw the area. So it's totally wireless. The software is actually part of the headset in this, the VR Quest from Oculus/Facebook. And so it really kind of frees you up to kind of do whatever you want.
Okay, so I'm trying to get my head around this. So it's a virtual reality headset, and then you've got something in your hands, but there are no wires.
Right.
And you're not plugged in anywhere. I mean, you're just walking around wherever you want to be, and you can be pretending to fly an airplane or going through a maze.
Walk a tightrope. That's the really scary one.
No, thanks. Andrew, what are you interested in? No, the tightrope. I think the whole thing sounds cool, go ahead.
Oh, well, having had the second generation AirPods replace my first generation AirPods that I lost helping a friend move, no good deed, you know. I'm like Jared, looking forward to the third generation AirPods that will actually stay in my ears while I'm running. So I'm the guy running with his hands to his head, trying to hold his AirPods in.
Now, are you certain the new ones will stay in your ears?
Yes, they have silicone tips that provide a little bit of a grippy surface. And not only that, they have three levels of noise cancellation, meaning you actually will be able to filter out some background noise and hear those airport announcements clearer.
You'll hear that their gate has been
changed.
Exactly.
Yep. So then you can get a running head start so that you make it. But not only that, one of the things I'm kind of interested in getting as a Christmas present for myself is a book called The Distracted Mind. And it's about it's an exploration of what technology is doing to our brains. And I'm a little bit intrigued by the fact that we have some great devices that are fun to use, but how is that changing us psychologically, physically, all those things? It's a pretty fascinating
book. You're interested to read this? Are you a little afraid to read
it? I'm a little afraid, but it's the fear that's driving me to actually read it. You know, you're afraid of things you don't know. So I think that I'm going to pick up The Distracted Mind, Ancient Brains in a High-Tech World.
And Janet, you're interested in a book as well, right?
Yeah.
And mind you, we're talking about books.
Yes.
Things
yes.
with hardcovers and
could be
paper
an e-book
pages.
Or it could be a hardcover book.
Okay, go ahead, Janet.
I'm You Look Like a Thing and I Love You, and it's how artificial intelligence works and why it's making the world a weirder place. Mm-hmm. So I heard actually on National Public Radio an interview with the author, and I was like, oh, this sounds so fascinating. So that's on it's already downloaded onto my iPad, and it's my next read.
All right. Well, let's talk about some things in the news. Jared, just a couple months ago, we did a main calling program about the new distracted driving, i.e. hands-free driving law. We all know that now we are not allowed to have a phone in our hand when we're driving in Maine, period. The car must be in park. So people who don't have a car that's already wired for Bluetooth, there are options for them, right?
Absolutely. Gratuitous plug, but I just... tonight on one of the local news stations, we actually are airing an article, a story we did. We tested last week three different Bluetooth hands-free phone devices for folks who don't have Bluetooth built into their car. I think the statistic was around 2014, 2015. It became basically a standard option. Interestingly, in Maine, we're a population of about 1 million people, and we've got about 1 million cars. So there's a lot of cars out there, including ones that are pre-Bluetooth. So
lots that are pre-Bluetooth.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's lots of different ways you can have these Bluetooth devices that run through your – essentially use the speakers of your AM, FM radio, and you connect through that. Some cars have auxiliary jacks or even cassette. If you still have a cassette in there, you can plug it in through there. But one of the better ones we found, and you can find them on Amazon, and I always tell people, you know, look at reviews, but just a standalone unit that goes in the visor was actually the best unit we tested. They're about $25, $30, a total bargain for a Bluetooth device.
And, oh, interesting.
And will connect to your phone and integrate with your Siri or your Android voice activation. And you can make and take calls without using your hands.
So if you have an older car, which I'm sure lots of our listeners do, but you have a smartphone, You can spend $25 or $30, hook something up on your visor, and then be able to use it as though you had a newer car that's...
Yep.
And how hard is it to set up?
Well, that's exactly what we did. We kind of went through how hard is it to open and set up. To be frank, we tested three devices, and they were all relatively easy, 5 minutes or less in terms of setup. The better one that we found... You know, if anyone has a phone and you connect to any Bluetooth device by going to your settings and Bluetooth and searching, and worst case, you have to put in a four-digit passcode, which always tends to be 0000, it's very easy to set up and, you know, will get you fully complying with the law. I'll tell you, I don't know, my own anecdote, I drive quite a bit, but I've noticed now that instead of people kind of keeping their head up looking at the road and you can see they have their phone, they're doing more of this like... The phone is dropped way down, which means their head is dropped way down, which looks almost more dangerous. So it's not very expensive to find a solution and have something in your car, you know, an independent Bluetooth device. And also not the other thing I've been seeing a lot is people wearing headphones. And you really shouldn't be wearing your Bluetooth headphones or any headphones when you're driving down the
road. You need to hear emergency
vehicles
and things like that.
And so be cognizant and conscious of what's around you. But $20 to $30, you can solve that problem, no problem. And the last thing I'll throw out is the unit, one of the units we tested that was $25, I think it sounded better than most people I speak to that have Bluetooth built in and integrated into their car. So it's a very nominal price to, you know, get up to date, be legal, and be safe.
All right. Well, another thing in the news, Andrew, this is the busiest travel week of the year. And a lot of people are going to be going to airports or train stations, places like that. And a big report out just this week about plugging into USB chargers in airports. Now, not talking about plugging your USB charger into an electrical outlet, but the actual outlet that now is in some of the more modern airports and things like that. The new report, don't do it. Don't plug into one of these. Why not?
Well, it was news to me, too. So what looks like what's happening is that the same way that a few years ago gas stations had a problem with people installing card readers so that they could fraudulently skim your card number, the same thing is happening with USB charging devices. Those are the little plugs that, you, as Jennifer said, not the electrical outlet part, but the dedicated USB outlet part. And that can be altered. Sometimes you may be able to see that something's not quite right, but other times you can't. And data from your phone can be skimmed using the pin that reads data from, and communicates with your phone. Because most phones... when you plug them in, only two of the pins are actively charging the phone, two of the connectors in the cord, and the rest are for data use. So the best solution is to block. You can still use these charging devices. They're even found next to your bed in a hotel room by the lamp. You know, those can also be altered as well. And those dedicated USB devices can add key reading software to your phone, can skim your phone for card numbers or anything, all kinds of crazy things. So the best solution is to turn off those data ports. And the only way that you can do that is with an adapter that you can plug the power end of your USB cable in to that adapter and then plug the adapter into the power port. And the leading company that makes this device is called PortaPow. It's available on Amazon for about $5 or $6. No surprise, it may be difficult to get one now because they've been...
But if you decide not to use a USB port and still use the electrical outlet, you plug your phone in by using it the old-fashioned way, if there's such a thing in this world, you're safe from that. It's when you're actually using the USB port that's sort of pre-installed that is the problem.
Exactly. And it's so tempting because you don't have to get your charger out and everything. You just plug right in and there it goes. But it's a big problem, as well as using public Wi-Fi systems. We're all tempted by that, but you should use password-protected Wi-Fi when you're in a public place or enable your phone as a hotspot, and that way you're bringing your own Wi-Fi system with you off of your phone.
Mm. All right, Janet, another thing in the news just this week, a big story on NPR about ebooks and how libraries, I mean, this has been a huge thing for libraries all over the state of Maine, that people can check out ebooks from the library. Different libraries do it a little differently. But now one of the major publishers is saying they're not going to release their titles to libraries.
Well, basically, there are five big publishers. Macmillan is the offender right now. And what they've decided to do is to embargo new titles for 8 weeks. And so that's basically 2 months. We already have
so the
huge...
libraries can't buy them. We're not talking about
rent.
Like, you at the Maine State Library can't say to Macmillan, I want to buy 20 copies of this book. They'll just say, no, you're a library. You can't.
Exactly. And so you'll be limited to one copy. And we have a consortia of hundreds of libraries in Maine to keep costs down. And ebooks, the average cost of an ebook for a public library is $55. It's not your $18.99 or your $25.99. And then there are restrictions. You know, you can only check it out 26 times, or it expires after 52 weeks, or it expires after a combination of all these. So the publishers have all these different things. And so, you know, Macmillan is really, you know, kind of killing a library's ability to satisfy the need of the patron. And when you come in, you know what the bestseller is, but you don't know if it's Macmillan or Simon & Schuster or whatever. All you know is that the library can't provide the book to you, or that we say, well, you know, maybe in about 20 weeks you can read that book. Normally, for a bestseller, our consortia would buy 10, 20, even 30 of those books at the $55 per, you know, title cost. And, you know, this is all digital, you know, that it doesn't have to happen, but publishers were not prepared for an ebook environment. And so it's been accommodations along the way. But libraries nationwide are now boycotting Macmillan, and our Download Library here in Maine is doing it. And we've encouraged libraries to do it, to try to really take a stand and say, we're paying for something. Anybody that reads a book, it helps publishers, because you read an author and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I like this author. And then you go and you read the back titles, and whether it's an ebook or whether it's a print book, whether you get it at the library, whether you get it at the bookstore, you know, libraries help publishers. So, you know, this is a really big thing right now.
All right. Well, we are talking with our technology gurus on Maine Calling. If you have a question for them, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email. Please make it brief, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. Lee Toyota of Topsom, featuring the new all-wheel drive Toyota Prius with an EPA fuel economy rating of 50 miles per gallon. LeeToyota.com. And Breakwater, curiosity for life, offering exceptional day school and after-school options for toddlers through 8th grade. BreakwaterLearning.org.
On the next Fresh Air, college in a maximum security prison.
Unlike other schools, it has bars, it has gates that close and open, it has doors that must be locked.
The PBS documentary series College Behind Bars tells the moving story of prisoners taking rigorous courses and earning degrees while serving their time. We'll speak with director Lynn Novick and two graduates of the program. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 here on Maine Public Radio. NPR One is a free app that plays back the latest newscasts and top individual stories from both NPR and Maine Public Radio. So if you missed Morning Edition or All Things Considered or the Maine news reports, there is always, anytime, NPR One. NPR One also allows you to skip ahead to the next report if you'd like to hear something else. And it also has an expanded local Maine section with newscasts and news reports. NPR One, a mobile app for Apple and Android phones that combines both NPR and Maine Public News. Free and available in the Apple Store or the Android Play Store.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, our tech team is here to answer your personal technology questions. My guest, Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology, Janet McKenney, director of library development with the Maine State Library, and Andrew Rosenstein, the owner of TechPort. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to listener calls, though, I want to ask you all about something that is on our doorstep, which is that many people have Windows 7 running on their computers, on their businesses, at home, and that the tech support you all are telling me is running out in January. Andrew, what does that mean for people?
It means that security updates won't be issued and that you'll be exposed. Essentially, it's the importance of updating your operating system doesn't mean you're always getting the latest, greatest desktop toys. It means that you're updating security and you're preventing access that you didn't authorize. And I mean, Jared, you can probably speak to this more fully, but it's essentially the support of security updates that's going away, isn't it?
Yeah, they're going to. As the operating systems get older, probably the big thing that people remember is however many years back is when XP came out, and that was it stopped. So people come in, I've heard a lot about this in the last few months, people come in with their computer, they don't know what to do. So a couple quick bullet points. A, your computer's not going to stop working at some point in January. It's going to work just the way it did the day before. It's just, and I don't know the exact date off the top of my head, but Microsoft has said as of this date, we're essentially not going to provide updates. Those updates could be, as Andrew mentioned, security updates. They could be as convenience and feature updates. So you're going to lose the bigger thing concern would be security and support. That being said, even with XP, even XP to this day, if a large enough vulnerability is found, Microsoft will still create and send out an update for those things.
But XP is predated.
Yes,
7.
Yeah, XP and then Vista and then 7 and then 8 and then Microsoft. Every other operating system seems to make a good one. 7 is one of the better ones, but.
So is the reason Microsoft is doing this because they want people to upgrade, or businesses and individuals to upgrade to Windows 10?
It's a big portion, part of it. They want people to update. Even to this day, if you have a Windows 7 machine, you can, bring it into a place like Andrew and I, and you can, with your Windows 7 activation key, your sticker, we can activate 10. I mean, they don't even want to charge you for it. So there's definitely a Microsoft push. And there has been since 10 came out to get people onto 10. And a lot of machines have gone there. A lot of the bigger folks that are going to be, bigger groups that will be affected are businesses. I mean, you still have everything from small, medium to large businesses running Windows 7 machines. And they're trying to get their head around right now, what do I have to do? So, again, your machine will not stop working. It's not there's not a zero day in January where it's done. Change doesn't necessarily even mean you have to buy a new computer. A lot of Windows 7 machines are still perfectly good machines running on newer style processors that could be upgraded. There would be a cost, of course, but that cost is usually, going to be half or less potentially replacing that machine on a one-on-one unit. So the change is coming. And then the other only thing I'll put out there, and I would literally, this is only my personal guess, but this did also happen with XP. They say it's January. You never know if that date, as it comes and goes, will get pushed out or extended, just because I really think about the vast amount of businesses and even large businesses, your Unums and IDEXes and Blue Crosses. I mean, they must still be running a lot of Windows 7-based machines, and that's going to pose a large issue for them.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And Janet, what does this mean for the libraries around the state or the schools around the state?
Yeah, a lot of them really, stay up to date, and they need to get machines every 3 or 4 years because of the amount of punishment they take being a public access computer. But, you know, a lot of libraries are really cost conscious. A lot of them have really tight budgets. So we know there's a lot of Windows 7 machines out there. So we're right now in kind of an education campaign and also trying to point them to resources where they can buy lower cost computers if their Windows 7 machines that are older can't actually take the new operating system.
We'll go to Joanne, who is calling from Harrison. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you so much. This is very timely. A couple of quick questions. I have had repeated break-ins in my home in this area and purchased a Nortec in-house intrusion alarm with door monitoring and whatnot. They are bypassing it. I also bought new Sledge deadbolts. They've broken into those. I have found on a Wired.com 2014 article there is something called Lawful Intercept available to former and current police officers, PIs, anyone related. They can purchase on Amazon, and I looked at this, you can, a transmitter that will block these relays that render all of these systems useless for unencrypted data. So the SimpliSafe, the Arlo, the Ring, all of these to have unencrypted data. Also, that's question one. Secondly, I'm looking for a new type of lock, and I'm looking at these home passcode locks, and I don't know that they're any better. So lastly, GPS, when there's a GPS implanted on your car, what can you, or where can you take it to the to be found? I've taken it to my car dealers, tire stores, you name it. No one seems to know. Thank you very much. This may be beyond your scope, but I thought I would ask.
Well, I was just going to say, with the home security stuff, you know, if you saw in the news a couple weeks ago, there was a break-in, and apparently it's a rash of them at businesses in Portland in the Westbrook area, and they have video monitoring or I don't know exactly what they had, but a Nest cam or a Google cam or some sort of camera. They have, you know, monitoring, but it all runs through the internet. So what the crooks were able to do is just go outside and before they go in your building, cut that one line of internet going in. So, you know, we are, if you're really having, you know, if you have a business or true issues like that, I still tell people you need to default to a standard type security system that goes out over the air or over a copper line hardwire, because all of our internet-based security systems are still based on literally that one black coax line that's running pretty much outside of everybody's house and business. So that's as simple as a pair of wire cutters. In terms of a car, I don't know technically where your GPS is located or if it can be disabled. That would be probably something for the dealership. I'd say this, your best security these days is still, you know, like a big dog or something, you know, an offline solution, because, you know, as fast as people can come up with an electronic solution to help you with something, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where there's somebody on the other side trying to figure out a way to beat it.
Yeah, and all of the lines coming into your house can be secured as well through, you can lock the entrance points. Generally, those are often opened one thought about the GPS car tracking is most generally only rental companies use that GPS car tracking. So if you've purchased your car from a rental company, you could go back to them and have that disabled.
Joanne, thanks for your call. We have an email from Sarah. I'm wondering about Maine's implied warranty. I got a Microsoft Surface laptop 16 months ago, and the hard drive died last week, 4 months out of warranty. I filed a claim under Maine's implied warranty that extends all warranties for 4 years. They denied my claim because they said, quote, the Maine consumer law is in relation to a product being sold defective, which is not the case here. I would like your opinion on this. Section 6 of the law says claims can't be denied, but I'm not tech savvy enough to use the right language to contest it.
I guess my question would be, who denied it? Mm-hmm. I just love to send people back to the big box stores. I actually think if it was up to me, and if we got any legislators listening, there should be a law in Maine, especially for these large big box stores, that when someone comes back in with a defective device after 14 or 16 months or something ridiculous like that, they should at a minimum be told that they could have possible protections. I think And for those who don't know, the Maine implied warranty law, we're a handful of states. I think there's about a dozen states that give essentially lawful consumer protection. The idea being if you go out and if you buy a new computer for $1,000 and 14 months later, outside of neglect or damage, of course, or an accident that is just not functioning, the consumer law protects you. And it's not just computers. It's washers, dryers, all kinds of things. Extended warranty purchases in Maine are oftentimes not necessary because that law gives us protection. I have customers come in all the time who have come in and the big box stores, because the law says it's not only the manufacturer, but whoever sold you that device is responsible to help you. And it seems to me that a lot of the larger companies have no interest in helping people actually maintain and get those rights. So I will oftentimes print out for folks the law from the Attorney General's office. That's who it's held through. And send them back to the store. And most of the time, I always get really good feedback from my customers who come back and say, you know what, they actually covered it. If they won't help you, then your next appeal, and this is where I don't know who technically denied this, is to actually fill out the form and go to, you know, go through the Attorney General's office, because they're the ones that would make the decision. But oftentimes, if you go to the bigger corporate stores, just even putting that on the table, oftentimes they'll be willing to work with you and do what's right. But it's a sad thing, because you have to fight for your rights. Your right as a Maine consumer, but you have to fight for it, and you have to really push. And it really shouldn't be that way. It should be easier for people to exercise their rights and have people do the right thing.
Sarah, that's a really good question. Thank you so much for asking this. We have a note here from our producer. People should turn off their Bluetooth when leaving tablets, laptops, etc. in their car. Thieves are using devices that pick up devices in cars that have Bluetooth on to locate and steal them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Sure.
So, and also hear many people asking for Jared to repeat the Bluetooth devices he listed earlier. So what we're going to do, Jared, is we're going to ask you to give us a list, and we'll post it on our webpage and our Facebook page after the show of the car Bluetooth devices that you've tested. Can I put you on the spot and ask you to do that?
I have the number one that we
sure.
did. You want me to say it right now?
Yeah, sure.
It's again, it's on Amazon. I'm sorry, world. That's where we're buying most everything now. We've got Black Friday, but don't forget Small Business Saturday. We love our local businesses. But it's called Besign, B-E-S-I-G-N, and the BK, like Burger King. That's where my brain is. BK06 Bluetooth in-car speaker with visor clip. It clips right on the visor in front of you. Again, Besign, B-S-I-G-N. BK06. It's a $25, and I would put it up against anybody who has paid $1,000 extra on their car to have, you know, a built-in Bluetooth feature. It was a great device and not expensive, and will help you be safe and be lawful.
A note here from Goodwill of Northern New England on Facebook. When you are ready to recycle your electronic device, Goodwill stores accept laptops, smartphones, tablets, and more. We wipe the data off of them to U.S. Department of Defense standards before refurbishing the device and getting it into the hands of someone who really needs it. So, Goodwill, thank you for checking in and reminding us of that service.
That's a great program. It's called Good Tech.
Yeah. So here we go. An email from Bob. I would like to have service done on my computer by a local person who advertises such support. How can I find out if I can trust this person not to take advantage of me? For example, to not surreptitiously download information from my hard drive, such as passwords or financial or personal identification information. I know it would be prudent to remove such information in advance onto USB or other device, but I don't feel confident I'll know the right places in which such information might be stored on my hard drive. Could they also upload malware to track me and send my personal information to them without my knowledge? And probably they could. Andrew, what there's a code of ethics in your industry, I'm sure. How does somebody know if they're hiring someone who's honest and is going to do the right thing?
Very good question. I think that's why you come to somebody like Jared and myself, because we've been in business for years and we know what we're doing. We've got a reputation online. And I know that Jared does as well. I take great pains to protect customers from any kind of data breach. And, you know, I'm not going to say fortunately it's never happened before, but we've been very careful about how computers are connected online when we're working on them. Often, if you're truly worried about your data, You can create a service account that has administrative abilities for so that software can be installed on your machine, and we don't have to be able to see your personal data. That works 99% of the time for us, and that's something easy to do. But it is a question that you should ask any technician who's working on your computer. You know, are they working out of their car? You know, that's maybe that's a, or their garage, or those are kinds of things that, you know, it's rare, but it can happen.
Reviews and recommendations. I mean, just like picking a mechanic, it's tough, but, and also if you get a sense of somebody, but I'm sure Andrew too, we've cleaned up a lot of messes for some really, I guess the best word is shady operations. And again, you know, you have a lot of people that just show up to your house and they advertise, but you know, just because you buy advertising doesn't by any means mean that you have a good or reliable or safe or trustworthy product. So reviews and recommendations, unfortunately, that's the world we live in, like you pick anything else.
We are talking with our tech gurus here on Maine Calling. If you have a question for them, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. If you'd like to send an email, do it quickly and make it brief, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice, with expanded services in Augusta, including pediatric care and telehealth. More at androscoggin.org. Ocean View at Falmouth, announcing Cumberland Crossing, its new sister retirement community in Cumberland. CumberlandCrossingRC.com. And Seniors Plus, Western Maine's Agency on Aging, critical services for older adults, disabled adults, and caregivers. SeniorsPlus.org.
Hello, I'm Jane Wales, host of World Affairs. A hasty U.S. withdrawal from northern Syria opened the door to a Turkish invasion. Almost immediately, we witnessed a reshuffling of geopolitical power in the region, involving Russia, Iran, Turkey, Syria's Assad government, and ISIS. Next on World Affairs, experts Brett McGurk and David Phillips help us to make sense of it all.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock.
In 1987, federal agents surrounded a trailer park in Missouri. Their target, the leader of a white supremacist militia.
I have eight teams of freedom fighters prepared to start a race war.
When agents arrested him, they found a massive arsenal.
C4 plastic explosives, hand grenades, thousands of rounds of ammunition.
Years after his release, he killed three people. How he slipped through the cracks this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's coming up this afternoon between 4 and 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answers to your personal technology questions. My guests are Andrew Rosenstein, who's the owner of TechPort, Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology, and Janet McKenney with the Maine State Library. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Okay, guys, I've got a big one for you. This is from Bruce. Big philosophical question to answer in just a couple minutes. I have learned that many of the devices you are discussing today are designed to be addictive, that they have shortened our attention spans, that they have been a platform to increase polarization and downright hate between people in our society, that they have been used by foreign governments to undermine America's democracy, that through high-speed training and trading and derivatives, they have destabilized the economy, contributing to the Great Recession, and that the smart speakers have already been listening in on people's living rooms. So I'd like to ask your guests, how does your personal risk-benefit analysis allow you to continue to use and promote these products?
Well, we're all unwitting accomplices, I guess, and the goal is to educate yourself a little bit. You can have these devices in your home, and you can shut down certain features that, you know, it's not always easy, but yes, we are kind of prisoners of Facebook and Twitter, but I think we don't really have to be. I mean, we have to remember, too, that everything that's coming at us is giving our brains a little bit of a dopamine hit. And dopamine is that molecule, that chemical you get when you feel happy about something, when you take a bite of a great chocolate chip cookie. You know, do you want to give that away to Twitter and Facebook? Or do you want to enjoy your chocolate chip cookie? It's a matter of maintaining your focus. And if your focus is diffused and all out there in the electronic technology universe, that's up to you. But it does take a toll on us. It takes a toll on our concentration, on our ability to focus in on different tasks. The book I was talking about earlier talks about how our brains really weren't designed for multitasking. And I think that we have to be smart about how we use technology, because technology is using us. It's using our data, it's using our time, and it's using our dopamine.
Janet, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, with everything with technology, it's that balance between convenience, access, and risk. And so you're constantly making, judgments along the way. You know, it's very convenient to talk to Alexa, but, when do you unplug it or shut it down? And the convenience of having GPS and being able to get someplace where you're not sure where you're going, but then, what are your concerns about, kind of that safety? But it's like, do I want my iPhone can track where I am? There's good in that, because if my car goes off the road and I'm knocked out, somebody may be able to find me with my iPhone. But then there's who's tracking me? Personally, I don't think anybody's tracking the librarian that lives in Gorham, Maine. So I kind of let go of that. But that's how I assess those kinds of risks.
And one thing I just could quickly add is that we're also being evaluated as customers by all of these online companies that we interact with. We rank companies. I'd love to go to Amazon but they're also ranking us as consumers, and there are ways that we can opt out of that, but they're very difficult. They often involve contacting each company individually and opting out of email marketing or email tracking. And also, we can shut off website tracking from Google and Safari and protect ourselves better and cover our tracks.
And use alternative search engines like DuckDuckGo.
Right. Or Brave is also a new Brave is a browser that works on Mac and Windows computers, and it does not track.
Or serve you ads. I was going to say Brave. And the key to this person's question is it's a cost-benefit analysis for each person. We all drive a car. We make a cost-benefit analysis of whether driving a car is worth it. Is the convenience of getting from A to B faster worth the environmental issues that it brings up? Is it worth the safety issues that it brings up? So, and in my case, I've got a 5-year-old now who's growing up in the world of, Alexa and smart devices. And it's in some ways, it's kind of exciting and interesting to see her interact. And then in other ways, to this person's point, part of it's kind of scary and a little bit dystopian, I guess. We're not in 1984 because the government doesn't have to actually spy on us. We are all opting in to basically share all of this information with the world. So best practices. And the last thing I'll say is kind of what these two are saying is, you need to understand your technology. And I know sometimes it's not easy, but we do live in the world of Google. The thing that, you're afraid of is also the thing that can help you, that can educate you and teach you. So there are lots of ways to, if you go out and buy a lock for your house, you're going to learn how to use the lock. A lot of folks with their technology go out and buy it, plug it in, and never actually learn the protections that are built in to safeguard it. So and hopefully down the road, think about it. The internet's really only for consumers. We're, 20 years old? It's still in its infancy. And a lot of times we are still the product of that for these larger companies. And one of my hopes is as the future progresses, especially with the internet, people do get more rights back. One of the presidential candidates talks about how the fact that, your personal data should be your personal data. It should be treated like personal property. And right now it's not. It's out there. So I think cost-benefit analysis for each person is the correct term. You have to look at the convenience you're getting, the access to information. Is it worth the potential trade-offs? But try and mitigate those trade-offs, though, with knowing what you're doing and using and use the security built into them to help at least calm down or minimize that amount of information you're giving out.
And Jared, when you say learn about what you're using, Janet, you're going to say, I suspect that your local library likely has classes or people who can help you.
Yeah, there's a lot of digital literacy classes that are happening at libraries all over the state. There's stuff online as well. And so, yeah, being educated, you know, these guys say it all the time, you know, don't leave that default password on your wireless network or your device or anything. You know, you just, you know, you have to be very proactive about managing your technology. And the more proactive, the likely more safer, safe you will be.
If you're afraid of Google, Google owns YouTube. You could go to YouTube and simply type in how to protect my personal data online. I guarantee there's hundreds, if not thousands, of videos. So, you know, I tell this to folks all the time, the thing that's driving you crazy, your technology, is also the thing that offers you the answers. And you can educate yourself as little or as much as you want to. So that same thing that sometimes scares us also gives us the opportunity to, you know, take control of our technology lives.
An email from Bernice. In regards to your guest who said, legislators, if you are listening, my husband is a state representative, and he said, tell them if you have an issue to contact your legislator. That is what we are there for. So there you go. We'll go to Tim, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have kind of a nuts and bolts question. I recently purchased a brand new GMC pickup truck, and it has the OnStar capability installed in it. And I choose not to subscribe to the service, but I'm kind of wondering how can I disconnect that device so that it's not continuing to report like how many miles per gallon I'm getting and all of these other things that I am then being fed back by General Motors. And I, as I said, I don't subscribe to the service, but they're still sending me these emails saying, you know, oh, are you aware? How can I disconnect that device?
Do you guys still have Car Talk as a show?
No.
That I don't.
You
don't
have to go to the dealer.
Yeah, you'd have to go to that. That would be a question for your direct.
And opt out of those, again, contact GM and opt out of those notifications.
But you're right. I mean, even if you're not subscribing or paying for the service, there is probably some module in there still collecting the data. You know, newer cars, even outside of GPS, you know, they can, if you get into an accident, they can. They can pull your data and know, you know, speed and things like that. So you'd have to really contact your dealer. They would be the ones that would know that.
Well, I Googled it. And it says it says if you want to, you know, disconnect, deactivate OnStar, there's a process that you can follow. And there's a 800 number that you can also call. So
cut the red wire.
Yeah.
No, don't. That's a joke.
Tim.
No,
Tim.
But it's customer service at OnStar 800 number. And there's also some really interesting pictures with a key and a toggle and all that kind of stuff. Mm. So Google disconnect OnStar.
There goes a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
And the cars are becoming more and more integrated. I mean, the cars are coming out now with, you know, the Alexa products built into the car. Why you need to turn your lights on and off from the car, I don't know. But That is a valid concern for folks because the cars are coming out smarter and more connected, which means they're collecting more and more data.
Tim, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Larry, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. I would add that the guy worried about the attention span of people. I think the 3-minute syndrome with music is one of the worst things that ever happened. What I wanted to talk about was I had no trouble breaking into my daughter's Bluetooth thing. And I know Bluetooth is by foot effective. I think it's 25 feet or whatever it is. But if you live in an apartment building, you may want to be very careful with Alexa and the others.
Yes, yeah. Set passwords. Bluetooth has a range of about 33 feet. So set passwords.
All right. Larry, thanks for your tip. We'll go to Fred, who's calling from Tenants Harbor. Hi, Fred. Go ahead.
Thank you. Great program. And my comment is, I think we all know what racism is, and I am now very aware of techism, how the digital revolution is being pushed and forced, pushed at me, to put it at that degree. And I don't like being sidelined, and I realize the economics especially large businesses, between telephone and email, et cetera. But there's a limit, and sometimes I've had it with being sidelined because I do not go. I do not go.
What do you mean internet. By being sidelined? Do you mean that if you need help with something, they're
nice
trying
to
make
to
you do it online, or?
Yeah, yeah, because it's less expensive. That's one reason. Maybe, you know, for some corporate, some companies, you know, that's the perhaps the major reason. But anyway, that I've just noticed this. And I think it lines up with what is being said here some of the time of the downside of the technological information revolution, which it is. And on the humorous side, there's a show or one of the segments of Downton Abbey where the telephone is introduced to Downton Abbey. And I find that very humorous and instructive about what's happening right now.
Sure. Downton Abbey also had a funny one when they had electrified lights, if I remember correctly, yeah. And they were worried about those as well.
Yeah. I was just going to say that the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, it's technology isn't just computers. At one point in the world, fire was a technology, you know. Cars replaced horses. You know, it's there's always this ebb and flow. This seems a little bit different just because as everything becomes more connected, your information and who you are is more out there. But there's definitely an argument to be made that, you know, the more we become, quote unquote, connected, the more disconnected people come. Mm-hmm. You know, you have access to more and more information. Andrew mentioned earlier, like, you know, how's it even changing us physically? I read something a few months ago. They're saying, like, they called it like horns on the back of a head, especially young people, because your head is tilted down looking at a device so much that the tendons and muscles connected to your skull are pulling and that the body is responding by actually having your bones grow out to meet that extended. So it's literally changing us, you know, physically. So there's pros and cons. And to this gentleman's point, he made me think about when you go to the grocery store now. You know, they want you to, they're pushing you to check yourself out. You know, you're losing that contact. So technology is replacing humans and the services that we used to get.
Right. Every single thing. You go through a toll plaza. You drive through that. You don't give money to a human unless you make a conscious choice to do so.
If you go down south now, a lot of their toll plazas, you don't even need an easy pass. They have zero option to pay in
cash.
We
will bill you.
Yeah. They'll just take a picture of your license plate and send you a bill in the mail. So, you know, that's a perfect example of something where that's, you know, completely taken over. I mean, I don't know.
We're at the end of the hour. We can't talk about Elon Musk and his predictions about the future.
I love the philosophical talk, though. It's important.
Yeah. Well, thank you all. Thank you, Fred, for your call. And thank you all three for being here. I want you all three to have a wonderful holiday season. And thank you for kicking off our Thanksgiving week so beautifully. Our guests here, Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development with the Maine State Library. Jared Maxfield is owner of Necessary Technology. And Andrew Rosenstein, owner of TechPort. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources, including Jared's recommendation for turning your car into a Bluetooth zone, hands-free Bluetooth zone, all of that at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.